Okay, I'd like to call to order the Tuesday, January 7th, 2014 Parks and Recreation Commission meeting. Can we have a roll call, please?
Chairperson Lehman.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Broad. Commissioner Adams.
Here.
Commissioner Cassiopeia.
Here.
Commissioner Coburn.
Here.
Commissioner Curtis. Commissioner Kiever.
Here.
Commissioner Long.
Here.
Commissioner McKenna.
Here.
A quorum's present.
Okay, at this point in the meeting, we will entertain any public comments that don't pertain to the agenda. Are there any public comments at this time? Okay. Number two, modifications to the agenda. Do we have any staff modifications?
No modifications from staff.
That's right. Very good. Skip right over number one, which is action on approval of minutes. We're talking about the September and October minutes here, which I was able to briefly look over. Any comments from commissioners on the September and October minutes? Is there a motion to approve these minutes?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, so we'll approve those 2 minutes. We don't have any modifications to the agenda, so we'll move right on to item number 3A, which is to elect a chairperson and vice chairperson of the Parks and Recreation Commission. So this is where it gets kind of weird, sticky, not sure what the word is, because, yeah, kind of along here. Janice can't come back because she's a city employee. Donna and myself have not been reappointed, so I'm not sure. Commissioner McKenna.
You want to do it again?
Apparently, I could do it one more year.
Do you want to?
I could do it one more year if that's. but I haven't been reappointed. So.
Well, you know, we were just discussing. Tina and I were discussing the situation because it is a little bit of a weird situation this year. Normally, you're reappointed before the first business meeting of the year, people who are up for reappointment. However, you're not the people who are seeking reappointment and people who are seeking initial appointment this year aren't going to be appointed until the second meeting in January. Yet the bylaws, your bylaws stipulate that the first business meeting of the year you elect officers. So we think you can go ahead and elect officers. If for some reason the officer that you select as your chair or vice chair is not reappointed, then we just simply hold another election, in February.
Okay.
I'm ready to make a motion.
Motion.
I move that we appoint Sean Lehman as president, or whatever it's called, of the Parks and Rec Commission.
Is there a second?
Second.
Does anybody want to make any other nominations for chair?
So my question would be for if Sean wants to be chairman, if he so declines, I guess, between now and the next meeting, that we would have the same essentially election again?
Well, if he declines, I would assume you'd be declining during this meeting, and then you would probably nominate another individual.
I wasn't even aware that I could go one more year. In that case, yeah, I would anticipate being reappointed, but if not, oh well. So
okay. So yeah, I mean I would vote for Sean if he's willing to stick it out another year.
Are you up for yourself though? Do you want to be chair of the state?
We still got vice coming up. Does anybody else want to nominate someone for chair? Okay, in that case, all in favor of retaining me for one more year as chair, assuming I get reappointed, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, easy enough. I'll go down and fill out the form, see if they reappoint me. Vice chair. We do need a nomination for that because Janice is not returning.
I'd like to nominate you, Brett, if you're up for it.
Okay. Is there any other nominations for vice chair? Well, that makes it easy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Sounds good. That was painless. Are there any public comments on this item? Okay. Item number 3B. This is discussion only regarding a review of the Parks and Recreation bylaws. Roger.
Sure, thank you. The other task that you have annually at the first meeting in January is to decide if you want to make any additions or any changes, I should say, to the bylaws. According to the bylaws, any amendments introduced during the meeting cannot be acted upon or voted upon during this meeting. I have to wait until the next meeting, which is February 4th, 2014. And just as a reminder, changes require an affirmative vote of two-thirds of the total commission membership in order to pass. So what you can do today, if you think of any amendments or changes you'd like to make to the bylaws, we can have a discussion. Staff will record those, and we'll bring them back at the February meeting. And at that meeting, you can vote on them whether you want to enact them or not.
I think the big change we made to the bylaws was the dress code last year. There's certain parts of the bylaws that we can't change, like city employees, term limits. Those are out of our control. Correct.
Those are actually covered and stipulated in the board policy for commissions and boards. Yeah, you're right. Those are, outside of your control.
Does anybody have any changes they want to see done to our bylaws? Okay, we're going to get out of here early. Is there any public comments on item 3B? No. Item 3C, this is discussion only regarding the possible acquisition of the Empire Ranch Golf Course by the city and its recreational potential by both Roger and Vern.
Very good. I'm going to go ahead and read the staff report. The Empire Ranch Golf Course, and you have an Exhibit A that shows a photograph of the golf course on the second page of the staff report, is under bankruptcy protection, and the city may be contracting with the bankruptcy estate to purchase the golf course. The golf course is vitally important to the city as a surface disposal site for the application of the city's affluent water. In a sense, a golf course can be thought of as an extension of the city's wastewater treatment process. The golf course, which comprises 27 holes and approximately 210 acres, also has been a tremendous recreational value for the city as well. At the December 5th, 2013 Board of Supervisors meeting, the board directed staff to contract with an appraiser to develop an appraisal for the course, and this has already been completed. The Park and Recreation, I should say the appraisal hasn't been completed, but the contract with the appraiser has been completed. The Parks and Recreation staff wants to discuss the recreational potential of this property with the commission in order to determine what type of recreation facilities and amenities should or could be included on this property if the course is purchased by the city and if it is used and managed as a parks and recreational asset. During the Park and Recreation Board meeting, there was interest expressed by the board, or during the Board of Supervisors meeting, excuse me, I can't even read my own staff report. During the Board of Supervisors meeting, there was interest expressed by the board of the suitability of the site as a disc golf course. And we mentioned that in preparation of this meeting, you may want to consult your master plan to take a look at some of the implementations that have been approved in the master plan, and particularly maybe take a look at the public opinion survey that was conducted during the formulation of that master plan in order to get an idea of what kind of recreation programs, amenities, activities, or facilities have been expressed as highly desirable by the community that maybe we haven't completely fulfilled or partially fulfilled. And with that, I'll kind of leave it over to the board here, the commission. But this is just kind of a first look at this, and I want to make it perfectly clear that the decision hasn't been yet to purchase the golf course. The city may or may not purchase a golf course, and if it is purchased by the city, it may or may not be used as a recreational facility. And conceivably, it could be used for any number of other type of uses. It could, possibly, become agricultural land and we grow alfalfa hay on it. But we have to have a site that we can dispose our effluent water on. It has to be a harvestable crop, and that's why an agricultural crop or bluegrass is actually harvested through its mowing practices. So that's why bluegrass is an acceptable crop for the dispersion of the effluent water. So this is just a very preliminary step. We thought it'd be advantageous for the Park and Recreation Commission to start thinking about the future, start thinking about the potential of the site, and begin those discussions and thoughts. So any questions or any comments?
I have one. Roger, suppose the city does decide to buy it. Mm-hmm. Is there funding available? Would we have to get a grant? How would we pay for it should we decide to go ahead?
Well, that hasn't been completely determined yet, but more than likely the funding for the purchase of it would come through the utility funds of the city, and particularly the water and wastewater, yeah.
The problem is that the land right now does not have a long-term contract on it to accept this water, and so it can be canceled after a period of time, a year or so. So if somebody buys the land out of bankruptcy court and wants to put housing on it or whatever, they can kick the city off, and we no longer are able to dump treated effluent. And that cuts the city's ability to get rid of wastewater. And the city then has to go out and find someplace else to dump wastewater or create a higher level treatment plant so that the water can be dumped in the river. We just can't dump the water in the river because it's thousands and thousands of dollars a day fines. So most likely what would happen is the city could buy the property out of bankruptcy, affix a contract to it that whoever buys the property has to accept the water and then sell the property at a lower value. Or they could turn it into a park because it's right adjacent to Riverview, and there's a nice area in between that's a floodplain that could be made into a wilderness park or something. There's disc golf could go into that floodplain. Disc golf could go on the course. The problem with golf courses is they cost a lot of money to maintain, and so most likely, if they did buy the golf course and if it was determined it was going to remain, all or part of it was going to remain a golf course, they would find a third party, probably a nonprofit, to run it. So there's lots of adventures out there, and think about it and let us know.
I had a discussion with Juan Guzman, our open space manager, and Juan was leading the effort to obtain an appraiser for the golf course. And the appraiser is also going to subcontract to a golf course specialist who specializes in appraising golf courses, and his task is going to be to look at the potential and the viability of leaving the golf course as a golf course. Looking at what is the highest and best use of the site. So I mean, conceivably, the spectrum of possibilities is very wide. I mean, it could be, it could be left as a golf course. I think some people find that hard to imagine, be left exactly like it is a golf course. There's 27 holes. Maybe 18 could be removed. Maybe 9 could be removed. Maybe all 27 could be removed. You could leave that as a golf course if we acquired it, and maybe take a look at the Eagle Valley Golf Course, particularly the East Course, and maybe take it out of golf. I think there's a sense in the community that we're a little bit over golfed in terms of numbers of holes per population in this community, and that's why some of the golf courses are struggling. Still, the range of possibilities could be everything from to leave it as it is, as a golf course, to make it a pasture or an alfalfa field, or it could be used for some other type of use, or fairgrounds. I mean, there's lots of possibilities we could look at.
120 acres would do us very well.
Mm-hmm. So, Commissioner Long,
do you know what percentage of the wastewater does it require, I guess, how much wastewater is being used on Empire?
How do you know the answer to that?
I don't know the percentage, but right now, with the drought, the wastewater is used earlier. It starts being used in February, March, and so it's pretty much gone by September, October. So we had a drought of wastewater this year. In the past, we were begging people to dump additional water on Eagle Valley and on Silver Oak and the prison farm just to get rid of the water. It all depends on what the weather's like and that sort of thing. The city has made repairs to sewer lines and that sort of thing, and that reduced part of the wastewater we receive because there was water leaking into the sewer pipes. I don't know. I really don't. It's long-term. There's a need for a comprehensive plan to deal with. I don't know if you know, there's a lake over there by the dump. That's where we store the water in the winter, and then it's brought back down and spread. We have to grow a crop under a Justice Department agreement that dates back in the 70s when they threatened to shut the city down, basically. And so I think anything's possible. It's just if the city bought the property, the city's worry is if they don't have this property available, they will put in a situation where they have more water than they can dispose of, and they dump it in the river at $50,000 a day or whatever the fine is.
So then the ultimate question is Eagle Valley doesn't have the capacity to accept 100% of the effluent water? There's no way it would?
Oh, no. It's Eagle Valley East, Eagle Valley West, Silver Oak, and the biggest user is the prison farm. The prison farm expanded their farm as far as they could a couple times to accommodate us and, you know, the availability of water, but they don't want to make their farms any bigger. The prison farm takes at least half and maybe as much as 75%, but it's a lot of water. It's millions and millions of gallons.
The last summer, I believe, was the first year that we actually had a shortage of effluent water. And we were augmenting that, I think, with regular potable water to get out to the golf courses. But talking to Andy Burnham and the people in our utilities department, they feel that that's just sort of an anomaly, and that, you know, as the city grows and expands, that it's going to become apparent and it's going to become critical that we have this property for the dispersion of the effluent water. So, right. It's a critical part of our sewage treatment system.
I was just going to comment that, I mean, this last summer was the driest and the hottest, I think, ever on record. So, of course, probably had to be, you know.
Looking like this one might be.
I know, we might be doing it again.
Now, is there a possibility that more effluent water could be used on parks? Is that possible?
We've actually reversed that. We've had several of our parks and athletic fields were using effluent water, but because of the shortage of effluent water, we reverse that, so they're using potable water now so that the golf courses could get the effluent water. But that could be reversed in the future as well. It could be changed back to effluent water for irrigation of those parks.
The other problem with effluent water is that it's a complete separate water system. Purple pipes can't be in the same holes as the other water system. That sort of thing. So it's very expensive to build two city municipal water systems. I think it was, I don't remember what Silver Oak paid. Silver Oak paid something like $1 million to get the water over to Silver Oak. And that was off of a stub pipe that goes out to Centennial. So it's expensive to dig up the ground and put pipes in, and then you have to maintain it and that sort of thing. As a separate water system, there have been plans to put it in all the schools, but you got to tear up streets, and so it can be done. The other thing you can do with effluent water, there's a sand mountain out to the south, eastern part of Carson City, the other side of the river, other side of the hills, take it out there and dump it in the Sand Mountain if you get EPA approval. And probably for the next 300 years, you get potable water out of it. That starts at $125 million and goes up from there. So it's expensive.
So the key is the infrastructure is already in place that to supply the water to Empire golf course, and so that'd be the most cost-effective option that the city has.
So, yeah, I guess that does seem most cost-effective, assuming the city can buy the course. So this sounds like it's really in the preliminary stages, and there's not a whole lot of figures out there yet as far as what it's going to cost. And
we've just contracted with the appraiser. Juan thinks it's going to probably be at least 90 days. It'll be about 90 days before we get some information back from the appraiser.
If everything else fails, you can put all the effluent on my backyard. It's really dry. Is there any other questions on this item? Now, just out of curiosity, what does it take, or maybe you know this, John, to, like, treat the effluent water to get it up to grade that you could dump it in the river?
Figure 125 plus million to build a four-stage treatment plant, depending on the capacity. It'd be easier to build a pipeline and dump it into the sand and let nature clean it than to build a plant.
So if we're talking pure...
There's problems with nitrates and phosphates.
Talking purely financial, then it comes down to what, if you're trying to figure out what's more cost effective, it comes down to the cost of the golf course versus getting a pipe out to the sand.
Yeah, and I think the cost of the golf course was like $2
million. Okay. All right, well, interesting stuff. Any public comments on this item? Okay. I guess we can move on to item number 3D.
But Sean, the other thing to remember, though, if the city gets this property and is going to retain it, then I think alternative uses, it'd be a good place for some alternative uses like disc golf.
Yeah, perhaps fairgrounds. I mean, yeah, true deal. Public comments.
Hi, my name is Greg Swift, and I've been before, long-time resident of Carson City. So I know, you know, this is all, I was just trying to figure out a timeline on this. And, you know, you're mentioning the disc golf. So disc golf community is just trying to figure out where the other site stands and a possible timeline on all this developing and just where it might lead to.
Yeah, the timeline as far as for the existing golf course, we're working with our folks over at Public Works to refine the area. This commission, as you'll recall, voted to set aside 60 acres north of the complex, and we're in the process of getting those things overlaid and coming up with a map. And we'll be getting together with you and or the other advocates later this month to kind of go over that information and share that with you. We were also going to share any thoughts that came out of this commission meeting with the group as well. So we're going to be looking and trying to wrap that up here and then get on to the Board of Supervisors February, March, to get that all taken care of. Then as far as the actual golf course.
That timeline is not really clear yet. As we mentioned, we've contracted with an appraiser probably about 90 days before we receive information back from him. And then depending on what kind of information we receive, then it's going to be action by the board to decide if they want to move forward, you know, with the purchase of the course and, of course, negotiating with the bankruptcy estate. So we're not sure how long that's going to take. But I guess maybe a question, you know, back to you is, do you have any thoughts about that site as a potential disc golf course site?
Oh, I think it's a very viable site. I think it's in a desirable location, and that was the other point I was just going to make is, you know, we can coexist, or if a certain portion would be dedicated to the disc golf, you know, I think either one of those could work. And that was my last thought is, remember that those disc golf baskets are very mobile. You know, it's not a major application in infrastructure that it can't be moved. So I, you know, was hoping the Flint site was still a possibility and then could move over. If it's just been an awful long timeline, so we're hoping to get something kind of in a timely manner, and then just that we can move it very easily, and hopefully this thing goes through, and that would be an awesome site. I believe that it could work, so appreciate your time.
So, yeah, I definitely empathize with you here because, yeah, you've been coming and supporting things, and just when we got Flint Dry, we figured out the dump's going to encroach on it. Then just when we figured that out, we got – so, yeah, there's all these things that keep cropping up, but I'm certain that one of these two sites would at some point, I would say this year, become available. Has there been any more movement on the land at the Flint Drive site that we've been – the city still doesn't have?
Oh, yeah. No, there has been. What we did, as the commission knows, we had two maps that we had. We had the original layout of the golf courses, and then we had the expansion plans for the landfill. We have now, working with the GIS folks, have blended those two maps together and see where we're going to have to modify it. The idea was, as the commission indicated at their motion, where they wanted to still try to keep 60 acres, and it looks like we can do that. So what we're going to be doing is getting that all situated, meet with these folks to make sure that they're comfortable with the kind of the layout of this new golf course, and then if they are, we'll move on to the Board of Supervisors for their action.
But I want to add to them and kind of make it clear that even if we came to an agreement with the Public Works folks regarding, you know, how that 60 acres is going to be configured, we're not ready to go yet on the Flint Drive area because that's still BLM property.
So that's my question.
So we have not received that yet from the BLM.
And we've heard nothing more from the BLM.
We keep hearing that we're 3 months away. You know, I mean, we've been here, and it's turning into a very sad running joke that we're always 3 months away. But we're pretty confident that something's going to happen in 2014. Our understanding is that BLM has made some strides, but some of that property is going to come to us in phases, and we think that the property we're going to receive first is probably going to be the Silver Saddle Ranch property, the Prison Hill property, and the
Ambrose.
Ambrose natural area property first, and then the other property will probably come to us later. So it's going to come to us in stages. So I guess kind of answering your question about timeline, it could be conceivable that the timeline isn't any more expedient with the site off Flint Drive than it is at Empire Golf Course. You know, I mean, that's conceivable. Working with the federal government, you know.
Yeah, I thought it was I do understand that, but... you know, I had no idea that it could take that long. I thought that was kind of on the fast track, that was just a matter of, you know, a few months. But again, you keep saying it keeps getting delayed, so.
Yeah, well, and we've been thinking it's a matter of 3 months for probably the last
Well, the disc golf community is ready whenever we can get a site. Yeah, well, I'm retiring, so I'm ready to go. So,
do we have like a contact person at BLM with this land?
We do.
Can we tell them that we've got disc golf people that are lined up? And
we have, yes.
Okay, and I know there's another meeting coming up, so we'll keep posting on that. Thank you.
Any other public comments on item number 3C? Okay, we'll go on to 3D. This is a possible action item to recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of the staff's fiscal year 2014-15 capital improvement budget.
I keep giving you folks caveats all the time, so I'm going to give you another caveat. But what you have in front of you right now is a recommendation from staff that we put together on the 2014-2015 capital improvement budget. And I want to state from the outset, and you have a list there that shows the projects listed and broken into two separate types, the minor projects and the major projects. The major projects are those projects that are over $15,000. But in discussions with our finance department this week, it looks very likely that we will not have a capital improvement budget again this year. And some of you probably know that we haven't had a capital improvement budget, I think, since about 2008. And it doesn't look like we're going to have one again this year. Nonetheless, we still go through the exercise of developing a capital improvement budget. You may wonder, well, why do we keep going through this exercise if you're never going to have a budget? And I can tell you that staff has that same question occasionally, but it is important that we go through and do this exercise because we do have to identify our needs. And we, you know, it's important to identify our needs and reevaluate them every year and make adjustments, because there are opportunities throughout the year that you know, I'm sure that you're aware of, that things happen where grants become available and we're able to complete some of the projects that are on the capital project list without having to receive funding through the general fund. And so you have an Exhibit A that lists the 2014-2015 capital fiscal year budget. We'd like to have a discussion with the commission on this recommended list, and eventually, after the discussion, have a recommendation from the Park and Recreation Commission to the Board of Supervisors to approve and accept this list. I can go over these if you'd like. Want to state from the outset that the last several years, staff's highest priorities have been were given to maintenance projects that have been deferred over the past several years. That includes replacement equipment as well. And then the other high priorities that we've always focused on have been safety and security issues. So those maintenance, replacement, safety, and security have higher priority and have for the last several years over adding new things to the system. And as this capital improvement project continues to be delayed and deferred, you're going to see that basically we're going to see a backlog of deferred maintenance, and every year we're going to have more and more maintenance items on there and fewer new items. Just give you an example, one of the things that's really not under the purview of this commission but is part of our department are a lot of building facility maintenance items. We have probably a backlog, I'd say we're probably backlogged about 5 years on our roof replacement programs, and that's a big ticket item. You know, if you talk about replacing a roof, you're talking, you know, usually over $100,000, $200,000 or more. And as we keep deferring that and backlogging that and kind of patching roofs together, that's going to increasingly become more and more important that when we do get money, those type of deferred maintenance are going to be at the highest priority and probably take up whatever deferred maintenance we have. The other thing to remember is that Parks and Recreation doesn't operate in a vacuum. You know, while we may think we're the most important function in the city, we also have other people out there like the Sheriff's Department and Fire Department and Public Works Department, our IT department, all these other departments that also have capital improvement requests as well, too. So it's there's a certain amount of competition involved in, for limited dollars, which it looks like we're probably not even going to have limited dollars in this upcoming budget year. With that being said, I would be happy to answer any questions. I can go over the list if you like, and we can talk about the items. So if you want to look at the list and if you have any specific questions about any of these items, we could certainly try to answer those questions.
Yeah, I know last year we went over this list pretty extensively, and we even had like a five-year plan last year. So obviously a lot of this is money economy-derived, and it seems like a lot of the indicators show that things are somewhat improving. I mean, I don't think we had a capital improvement budget since I've been here, and that's understandable in like 09, 10, 11 during the height of the recession. But is there any indicators that we will have a capital improvement budget at some point? Or
well, you know, I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head. I mean, it does seem like there is somewhat of a small, kind of a slow improvement in the economy here. But according to our finance director, really all of our budget projections are right on track, which were very conservative. We have seen some increases in sales tax revenues lately, but they're still not at the level that they were back in 2007, 2008. But they are at least meeting budget projections, which were budget projections that were set very low. So while we're meeting budget projections, we're still way below at the levels that we were receiving back in, you know, back 5, 6, 7 years ago.
So the last year that we had a capital improvement budget, when was that?
I believe it was the 2008-2009 budget year. So what we've done the past several years is the little bit of cash carryover that the city's had, we've really set aside, and we have instituted a process where if you have a need, and usually those needs are an emergency type of need, we meet with a committee. It's called the Internal Finance Committee, which is made up of our city manager, our public works director, our human resources, I think a representative from the DA's office, and our finance director, and you have to plead your case to that committee and receive approval for the, you know, for any type of purchase that would normally be a capital purchase.
Commissioner comments? Commissioner McKenna?
Well, it was a discussion at the last board meeting. The courts came forward, and they have $25,000 left on a project they spent hundreds of thousands of their own money on, and the board turned them down and told them to go back to the process. So the board isn't spending any money. But I have a question on this list. You have on the last item, on the one that was handed out, MAC question 18 fund plus 8 cents sales tax. If that qualifies for the 1/8 cent sales tax, that's going to be a discussion and possibly a board vote to implement. Why can't the other things such as orchestra pit lighting, et cetera, be forced to be on that list as part of what the board does? Or if we put it on the ballot, to take care of these small projects.
So, no, I think your question is some of these projects, such as the improvements to the theater, why can't they be included in the 1/8 cent sales tax? Mm-hmm. You know, well, that's, you know, that is the board's prerogative. You know, you can add and subtract to that spending scenario. I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that that has to be done. At the last meeting, the board approved the funding scenario, and that included the four projects, and I believe if you want to add or subtract to that funding plan, I believe you start the process over again. Is that correct?
That's what I understood, but it's not my it's not my project.
Yeah,
but that's my general understanding of it.
But but ultimately, it is the board's prerogative if they want, you know, if they wanted to add or subtract to that list.
But these things weren't on the list, right? Okay.
So, just to be clear, like in my mind, like this capital list, like is this like a general funds? Like, is that where that comes from? Is like the general fund, and
that's correct.
Ultimately, well, it's not. It's not Q18. It's not.
Yeah,
these,
you know,
things would come out of.
It's general fund. But let me give you an example. If you look at under the major projects, which would be the second half of that project on Exhibit A. If you look at item number 18, theater seating replacement, that's estimated to be a $280,000 project. Out of that $280,000, I think we have about $106,000 out of question 18 that is going towards that, and then the bulk of that is from other funding sources such as residential construction tax, a carryover of the 210, which was a capital improvement project from years past. So some of the projects have blended funding of general fund and other sources, such as question 18. Most of these, however, are general fund projects.
Roger, where do the funds come from in the past for these development, or is there a tax source for them, or? If we were back in 2006, where would the money come from?
That's a great question. The money for capital projects have always come from several funding sources, one of them being the general fund. And of course, that's, you know, the year-end carryover that has been approved by the Board of Supervisors to be included in the capital improvement, general fund capital improvement project. Question 18, of course, has always been particularly in years where sales tax revenues were high, was always a source for funding capital projects. Residential construction tax, which is a tax based on the construction of living dwelling units, has been an important funding source for these type of projects. We all know what has happened to residential construction in the city, although it seems to be picking up just a little bit now. And then, we've had grant funding sources as well.
One of the reasons I ask is no one projects that the city budget's going to go back to where it was anytime soon, and I don't ever see construction being the way it was in this town. So is it more prudent, instead of keeping a list like this going forward, to have a list of projects that were things we're starting to shut down, such as do away with some parks and let them go fallow, that sort of thing? Reno's closed parks. There comes a time when you can't afford what you had in the past, and it looks like we may be there. Just a thought.
It's another good comment. John, I can tell you that we have internally those discussions all the time, and I can tell you that Scott Fehrenbrook and I, we went to the Internal Finance Committee a couple months ago to try to get about, $30,000 for playground equipment replacement. And we were told, no, there's no money in the general fund for it. Try to find money elsewhere. And we actually found about $30,000 in a carryover account in residential construction tax, and we emptied that, and we were able to purchase playground equipment to replace. But we're getting close to that point where if playgrounds are a good example, if we can't replace playground equipment, we may have to remove it. And if we have a pool slide that we can't replace and it represents a danger, we may have to remove that too. I mean, we're kind of getting to that point where that's going to be a very realistic consideration.
So I guess what I don't understand, this isn't this commission's real, we don't have a lot of say in any of this, but if we raise the 8-cent sales tax, our sales tax is maxed out, our property tax is relatively high in my mind. We have a consolidated city-county, so we're supposed to save money by not duplicating governments, city and county. But yeah, we're always, are we ever going to like pull out of this? It seems like was back in 2002 where we like just, because I wasn't here, so before the recession, were we just flush with money and we were buying stuff, and it just doesn't seem like there's ever an end here.
Well, you know, I'm not an economist, and I can't tell you if we're going to pull out of this or not. My general sense is that we live in an area that's a very nice area, and we have an area that, in a lot of respects, affords a high quality of life and provides that. And we have an area that has a great climate. We have a lot of advantages in this area, and I think that we're probably a well hidden gem. And I think that that's going to catch up eventually. I think people are going to find out that this is a quality place, and I think that there's going to be economic development and improvement in the future. John says it may never be back to the 2002, 2004 level. He may be correct, but I think we're going to see improvements. But how long is that going to take? I don't know. You know, we just, in the staff meeting, we had a report from our chief planner who gave us a report on the state demographer's report that Carson City from 2012 has lost another almost 2% of our population. So, you know, there's still a migration to a certain extent out of Carson City, and all of northern Nevada seemed pretty flat, if not losing population. Yet down in the southern part of Nevada in Clark County, they're seeing increases now. The Summerlin area of Las Vegas, I think, had over a 6% increase in population during that same time. We're losing population. So are we just delayed, and is that effect going to migrate up here, and we're going to, you know, are we going to see some improvement too? Who knows? I can't tell you. But as far as were we ever really flush, you know, I've been here since 2004, and it was pretty good then, but we weren't exactly rolling in the dough either. You know, we had challenges even then, but we were bringing in, I don't know, we were bringing in about $2 million a year, if not more, about $2.5 million a year, I think, in question 18 sales tax revenues, and now we're bringing in about $1.6 million. You know, so it's still tough. It's still tight. And I think it's going to be that way for probably at least a short-term or foreseeable future. That's my guess.
So, I mean, yeah, obviously these are tough decisions, but kind of like what Commissioner McKenna said here, I don't see where there just isn't any more options with revenue because, I mean, the 8-cent sales tax, if that's used up, you're maxed out there. The construction, yeah, I don't think it's going to go back to where it was. I mean, maybe it would, but there's a point in time where there's just not even that much land to develop on here in Carson City, so... If you can't increase the revenues, at some point you do have to look at the expenses. But going back to like maintenance, perfect example is like the trails in Long Ranch Park, which are real popular. Well, yeah, they're falling apart big time. And if you don't maintain them, at some point you're just going to have to like tear them out. And then you lose quite a gem there. So I don't know. Some of these maintenance things seems like they would have a little bit of a weight with the city, but.
And that is why, as I mentioned earlier in my report, that our highest priority were on maintenance. That's our highest priority, to address the maintenance, repair, replacement, safety and security needs that we feel like we have. I want to make the point clear, too, that the 1/8-cent sales tax that is being proposed cannot be used for maintenance items. But there is room on property tax. I mean, there is still room on property tax if the Board of Supervisors wanted to, enact some increases there.
Right now, property tax, there's 10 cents left that can be assessed. Given the formula, that's about $200,000. That $200,000, if it's assessed this year, is about $200,000. If it were assessed in 12-13, it would have been $600,000. That difference is the declining value of houses, the 3% cap on property tax. There's all types of computations in there. So there is a little bit of room, but not millions.
Questions or comments by commissioners? Commissioner Long.
Well, it's kind of depressing. I guess one thing always comes back is, we've gone around and around about the MAC and not having enough money. I kind of struggle to, ever make a decision on moving forward with that when we don't have money to maintain what we have, even when we're just talking about a simple park. So more just a comment, but it's depressing.
Anyone else? Public comments?
Just one. I think piggybacking on what Commissioner Long said, at what point do we, do we go through the exercise and say, this is what we really need and this is what we don't need, and like trim down, right? Because it feels like we're still at, like from a Parks and Rec perspective, at like 2005, 2006 levels and trying to support that and no funding for it. I mean, if we genuinely lost 2% of our population, then like we ought to, this infrastructure ought to reflect that as well. And I just don't know when you do that exercise and say, whatever, doesn't work anymore.
We kind of did that exercise, about 2 years ago, where we literally had to pull out X percent out of the budget and start checking things out.
That's correct. We went through a series of two or three pretty significant budget reductions throughout the city, including our department. And we went through that, and we included the Park and Recreation Commission in that process. And it was a very difficult process to go through. It had to be done. We lost probably about 30% of our budget, I think, in that process, and lost, quite a few positions. The positions we lost, some of them were vacant at the time, so it didn't really result in any, personal hardships for those individuals. But it's a loss of opportunity for positions in our department, the city as a whole.
And, yeah, we took a 50% cut in our pay on the commission during that.
Rightfully so.
Anyone else? Yeah, I mean, when you go back to cuts, and I'm not just talking about this department, and this is all the board's deal, but the biggest expense is always personnel. And And I'm not even talking about this department, but it seems like other departments, I don't know. I mean, I read about other departments and some of the things, and it seems like there's some room for cuts there, but that's all the board.
Let me address that since you bring it up. The last year we faced a shortage in the general fund budget, and we looked at where we could cut, and we could have laid off all of the Parks and Rec people and all of the Public Works people and still would not have had enough money to balance the budget. The only place that you can make significant cuts are police and fire, and so far no one has wanted to do that in this community. So that's where we're at.
Fair enough. I know that. I think some of the salaries at the top of those departments are quite high, but that's my opinion. Anyone else? Any public comments? Okay, get through that one. Ooh, wait, this is an action item. Does anybody want to make a motion on this? I mean, yeah, if we don't make a motion, it's not going to really affect much.
I mean, if you don't make a recommendation, we're submitting what we have, you know.
It doesn't seem extraordinary, although obviously comparing it to last year's, most of the things are a repeat of what was already on there, that which we already approved last year. So I guess you could go through and try to cut some of these out, but ultimately it boils down to if the roof starts leaking, they're probably going to fix it. So,
Mr. Castillo.
Do we have, and I don't know if it's covered in maintenance, but on some of these items, ADA issues, ADA accessibility issues, is that covered under maintenance? Do we have any liabilities out there to where we have to spend some monies related to those kinds of things?
We have a liability with a justice decision, and I'll let Scott kind of speak that. He's been on that committee.
Yeah, a few years ago we performed a citywide audit, and we set aside money for that, and we continued to make improvements. As an example, you folks heard about the carriage house project that we're building at the Foreman and Roberts house right now. As soon as that project is done, then we will do another project over there that is funded with the ADA audit money to do ADA improvements over there. So we are systematically chipping away and addressing those areas that you're talking about, and those areas are identified in the federal audit that they did. Okay.
Does anyone want to make a motion, or are we just going to let this one slide?
If I remember right, we were talking a potential liability in ADA improvements of well into the millions of dollars. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this was just the tip of the iceberg as far as what we're doing right now. But at some point, we're going to have to address a lot of other ADA issues. But for right now, we are trying to address, obviously with new construction, we address them all the time. But with retrofit situations, we're trying to address the ones that were identified at the federal audit level first. And then a lot of them are going to have to be addressed at the CIP level, or more ADA funding is going to have to be made available.
I think we might have asked this last year, but is there any rhyme or reason to the numbering on the, the minors?
Is it a priority?
Oh, yeah. Good question, Brett. Yes, that is our priority. That's a listing of our priority.
Okay. Well, I guess just looking at some of the things, like item number 4 is ice rink tents. I do like the ice rink and everything, but seeing that it's up just a few months out of the year, I could see that being moved down to the bottom of the list when it comes to a comparison, I guess, to some of the other items that are on here. But I don't know if anybody else has thoughts. But in general, like I mentioned, I don't think anything's extraordinary. I think it's just more like a maintenance-type items. But if we were to prioritize it by what do we really need, I guess we could put some work into that.
And I might comment on the ice rink tents. That's really basically a replacement. The tents that we have there are not holding up to the snow levels we get. Believe it or not, we had enough snow this year, it collapsed the tent. It's hard to imagine right now. And so we do need to look at replacing those if we're going to kind of continue that program.
Did you
Yeah, they do generate revenue. That's a good point. They, because we rent those tents out, and plus being part of the overall ice skating rink program, that is a positive revenue generator. Those tents have been used for other purposes occasionally, and there's probably a lot of potential for using them for other programs as well. Much more potential for that.
Commissioner Kiefer.
Roger, I thought that the ice rink, that skating program, was pretty much self-supporting and paid for itself. So would it be paying for these tents or no? And if the tents are used for other purposes, have we taken advantage and, like, publicized that so people know that they're available?
Well, we haven't really promoted that as much as we probably should. We see those tents maybe, you know, being used more in special events that be hosted by the city. We don't want to be in the business of renting the tents out to the general public, you know, for other type of uses. You're right. The ice skating rink does it is self-supporting. It makes it'll generate probably we hope it generated a small profit this year, but it's not enough to pay for the cost of replacing the tents. By the way, that the money it generates goes back into the general fund anyways.
Anything else? Yeah, this is Commissioner McKenna.
Roger, can we vote to send this list forward to the supervisors so that if for some reason money magically appears, Parks and Rec is in the discussion, and then if we get any money, come back and revise this list? I don't want to spend a bunch of time revising this list and moving things up and down and getting no money. But if I got money, I would want to spend it differently than what this list says.
Well, we certainly can do that. And you know, you get two opportunities at this, John. You get an opportunity as a commissioner and an opportunity as a supervisor. So you certainly can do it. You can recommend this list with a proviso that if money is available for capital projects, we would like to address the list in more detail. You can certainly do something like that. I think it is important, quite frankly, to move the list forward to the board so they know what the needs are. But we certainly can bring it back for further discussion if money does become available for a capital improvement.
Right, and I'd like to, I would like this commission to have complete discussions and approval authority as to where this money gets spent, if there's any money available to spend. So, yeah, I would move to recommend the Board of Supervisors approval of staff's fiscal 2014-15 capital improvement budget in amount, but not in detail, and have the detail come back to this commission for final approval.
So, I second.
Before we make the motion, I might even jump in there and say, instead of recommending to the Board of Supervisors to approve it, that we recommend to the Board of Supervisors to fund it, because we approve it every year. But let's.
I'll add that to my motion if the second will add approve and fund.
So let's. Does anyone want to take a stab exactly? We got a motion and a second?
Yes.
With the addendum that we approve and fund this list. And all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Did we do public comments on that one?
You did before. Okay. You can ask for public comments again.
Any more public comments? Okay, 3E.
You did a good job.
For possible action, another possible action, to recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of staff's fiscal year 2014-15 quality of life, question 18, fund carryovers.
Very good. Attached as exhibit A is a summary of staff's proposed quality of life, question 18, capital budget. And this is the capital budget, and as you recall, we have three parts to the quality of life, question 18 budget. We have the capital budget, which is generated by 40% of the 1/4 cent sales tax that funds the construction and development of recreational facilities, parks, neighborhood parks, recreation facilities, those type of projects, including trails. And then 40% goes to the management and the acquisition of an open space program, and then 20% is set aside for the maintenance of the park and recreation capital projects that have been constructed using those funds. The project list illustrates staff's plan to distribute our carryover accounts. It's estimated by the finance department there will be $6,042,617 in carryovers for fiscal year 1450. Generally, carryovers are used to backfill or replenish project accounts that are zeroed out at the end of the fiscal year. At the end of the fiscal year, we zero out all those capital projects. And then when the new fiscal year starts, that money is replenished back in. So they just normally go back into the accounts that they were zeroed out. So there's very little amount of money that is actually available for new projects. This year, staff is recommending adding $75,750 of the carryover to Centennial Park to provide a match for the Land Water Conservation Fund grant for ADA improvements. Also included is funding of $10,000 as seed money for disc golf course. This budget includes $31,246 in undesignated account to cover unexpected expenses and projects. And then so if you look at Exhibit A, you can see what we're proposing to do with our cash carryovers. And so really the only changes in this project list is, if you look down at the fourth item, the disc golf course, that's the $10,000 that we're recommending that we put in for seed money for the eventual development of the disc golf course. And then if you go down to the third item from the bottom, the community center theater improvements. This is basically to replace the seats. This is an item that John talked about, brought up when we were talking about a little bit about the 1/8 cent sales tax. We are recommending that we use $106,000 from the undesignated projects so that we can complete this project. So that means the total funding from the community center, or from question 18 for the replacement of the community center seats, is $174,834. The total project cost on that is about $280,000. The bulk of the other money, roughly about $90,000, is money that has been carried over and saved in accounts. This is such as our residential construction tax and other accounts. So we feel that by moving that $106,000 into the community center for replacement of those seats for the improvements, that we will probably be close enough that we can move forward on that project and possibly even go to bid and complete that project in the next fiscal year. So that's kind of exciting, because that's been a project that has been, like a lot of our other projects, has been in the planning stages for probably 10 years, if not more, maybe a dozen years. I know it was, when I got here 9 years ago, we were
still trying to do that.
We're still trying to squirrel away money at that time. And the need is really getting to be important there. Our chairs are failing. Our seats are failing. It's not a seat that is available anymore. So replacement parts are hard to find. And so we really need to get in there and replace those seats. We had a little bit of good news. Our finance department alerted us the other day that due to some savings in our bond out of question 18, that they found additional $56,000. And so now, really, in our undesignated account, that's going to leave us, instead of $31,246, we're going to have an excess of $86,000 in that undesignated account. We would like to hold on to that as undesignated for the time being for the fiscal year, in case we need that to augment some of the other projects that are planned. But it's nice news that we have actually a little bit of wiggle room there. Not a lot, but a little bit of wiggle room in the quality of life fund. Any questions?
So this 143K, like, you're negative in the account right now? So that's him?
No, that's the beginning balance. So you subtract that from the amount. Our total, we had $6.2 million. You subtract out the $75,700 for the grant, and then the $143,933 is a cash carryover, but that leaves the total of $6,042,000.
Got it.
gets a bit of a bitter pill, right? Like that you look at $1.7 million in capital improvements and you have $6 million sitting effectively. In question 18, like how much of the maintenance qualifies in question 18, like on your capital improvement budget?
Well, this is,
we have like a forever Mac project that's going nowhere fast, and it's a 5.7 nugget.
And
can't get maintenance done?
That $5.7 million is earmarked for the Mac, and that's listed in the 1/8 cent sales tax as a project. If that is approved, then that $5.7 million would be expended rather quickly, and that would be no longer available for that project or for any other projects.
I get it, but when do we get smart? Mm-hmm. It's a project that's gone nowhere for how long, right? Like I said,
I think
it's just commentary. It's a bitter pill.
No, I think it's a fair commentary to make. You know, we think, you know, we're going to find out probably in February whether that 1/8 cent sales tax is going to move forward or not. You know, so and if it does, the MAC project. In fact, I'm going to be giving a little update on the 1/8 cent sales tax, but the if that happens, the MAC project will probably be the, out of the four projects, would be the first project to proceed with because we're already at the 60% design phase. And so we're well ahead in the design phase of any of the other projects. So it'll probably be of the four projects, the first one started and probably the first one completed.
But I get it, right? Mm-hmm. But like we just talked about, we're so overextended infrastructure-wise, mm-hmm. so we need yet another building to maintain and do all of these things for. Just not so sure, right?
I think the point is, and it's kind of a valid point, but yeah, talked this one over and over and over. Let's say we don't get the 8 cent sales tax, and we're left with $5.7 million in the mini Mac. Well, there could at least be the discussion of scrapping it and using that money to maintain everything and upgrade the gym and blah 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 blah.
You're exactly right. I mean, if the 1/8 cent sales tax doesn't pass, and if Mac project's not included in that, if it does pass, then we're going to have that discussion. We're going to have to bring this back and say, okay, we have $5.7 million. What do we want to do? Do we want to go with a smaller version of the MAC and get that completed? Do we want to direct that money to another, to other projects? We're just going to have to take a look at that. Now, remember, this is capital projects. This isn't the maintenance portion. The maintenance is a separate fund out of question 18 that's used for maintenance.
But now, going back to the original question 18, it did. I think it did specifically say it would fund a recreation center. So
a gym.
Is it a multi-use gym? Yeah.
And now
the actual word is community gym.
Whatever that means.
Well, and we actually had I believe there was a district attorney's ruling on what the definition of gym was. Yeah, and because the question was at the time, this predates me, was what do you mean by gym? And basically the ruling said that basically a gym is a multi-use indoor recreational facility that can host sporting events or community events or social events. So it was a very broad, very broad definition of a gym.
And yeah, these are discussions we'll have to have after the 1/8 cent sales tax, but I mean, did the question say a new gym? Because you could talk about okay. Then the one question I've always had too about the $5.7 million for the Mac, Mini Mac, Big Mac. That money's just not sitting in the bank somewhere. It's not tangible funds at the moment, or is it?
Yeah, it's tangible funds.
So does it make an interest?
Yeah,
I mean that big a chunk of money. Okay. All right. Any other questions or comments on this one? Any public comments? This is another action item. Does anybody want to take a stab at this one? Nobody? We're going to just do the status quo.
Yeah, well, I like the wording that they provided.
Have at it.
I move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of staff's fiscal year 2014-2015 quality of life Q18 fund carryovers.
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Great. We did ask for public comments, so we'll move on to item number four, which we were kind of talking about already, staff updates regarding the actions of the Board of Supervisors during the December 19th board meeting about, one, redevelopment, two, designation for the permanent site, and the 1/8-cent sales tax.
Okay, that was a the December 19th, 2013 board meeting happened to be a meeting that covered a lot of park and recreation issues and issues that also included recommendations from the Park and Recreation Commission. So I thought it'd be a good idea to try to give an update on all three of these. The Redevelopment Authority funding, the Redevelopment Authority Citizens Group, I think is their actual
Citizens Committee.
Citizens Committee, and the board approved funding improvements to the Carson City Fairgrounds in the number of about and a number of in just in excess of $159,000, and this included improvements for electrical infrastructure improvements to the fairgrounds. This in part will, part of this funding will enhance and improve the ability of having the Nevada 150 Fair this coming summer at the Fuji Park and at the fairgrounds, but it will also provide the ability to host other special events at the fairgrounds and at Fuji Park as well. A lot of these, not, I don't know if it's the majority, but quite a few of the improvements that this is going to help fund were also needs that were identified in the master plan and the design of the Fuji Fairgrounds back in about 2007,
six.
That unfortunately we didn't have enough money to fund all the, you know, all the design of the, it was included in the master plan, so they were cut out of the construction of it, but this will help pay for those type of electrical infrastructure. And so they have $159,000 was approved by the RAC committee and also approved by the Board of Supervisors. So that's a project that we'll be moving forward on. The second one was the designation of a permanent site for the 9/11 Memorial. If you remember right, at the last meeting, Supervisor Jim Shirk met with this commission, and he had a request that you designate the existing temporary site as a permanent site for the 9/11 Memorial. We brought that forward to the Board of Supervisors. The there was some discussion among the board that maybe we should work with the fire department and the Firefighters Association because they have an interest in that, obviously have an interest in that memorial as well, to take a look at considering some other sites and improvements to the to those other sites as alternatives and to bring it back to the board. And so they didn't approve your recommendation to designate the temporary site, but actually gave us direction to consider other options. We have started on that, actually. Vern Cron and I met with Chief Stacy Giomi and Tom Carrillo and out at the site and looked at about three sites out there. We kind of like the site that's just south of the present Firefighters Memorial on the Sealy Loop, which is on the east end of the park. We think that has some potential as a nice location for an expanded and improved 9/11 Memorial. We're going to be exploring that option in a little bit more detail. We may develop a little design charrette with the idea of kind of coming up with a concept of this, what this memorial would look like. We'll be bringing that back to the Park and Recreation Commission at a later date when we have that completed. The idea is that in order to look at trying to come up with some and be able to recruit some private donations and money towards this project, we have to have something that we can show people. We have to have at least a concept. You know, that will help greatly in the process of trying to obtain funding and donations for the project. So we'll be bringing that project back to the Park and Recreation Commission as we move forward. And eventually, of course, it'll go back to the Board of Supervisors for their approval, too. But that project's in the process. The third one is the adoption of the plan of expenditure for the 1/8-cent sales tax. We talked a little bit about that. But basically, during December 19th, 2013, meaning the Board of Supervisors approved moving forward. They voted unanimously to move forward with the project in terms of setting up some public hearings. And we have a schedule for the public hearings. I'll go over that with you in a minute. To gain public input on the plan and to inform the public on the four aspects of the plan. Depending on the type of public comments that we receive, more likely this will come back to the Board of Supervisors maybe in February at the earliest with an ordinance for their consideration of enacting the 1/8-cent sales tax. When it comes to an ordinance to enact a tax, they have to have a supermajority, so they have to have at least 4 out of the 5 votes to approve it for it to move forward. I think that's pretty much all I have to cover in those three areas. Do you have any questions?
So two quick questions. The 9/11 memorial site, which we did talk about here, and we had Jim Shirk. His preferred site was the current site.
That's correct.
And so the Board of Supervisors didn't like that site, apparently.
John, help me out here. I think they didn't take action, didn't they?
The fire chief intimated that there might be money available from those that like to support memorials that the fire people know, and they would want it closer to the current memorials. And that's what I got out of it, was if we hold off for a little bit, there might be some money to pay for the thing.
From a firefighter's fund of some sort?
Or from, 9/11 has an intimate connection with firefighters because they went in the building and died. And so there are memorials, people out there that are funding firefighter memorials because of 9/11. This is a 9/11 memorial next to the firefighters memorial. Maybe there's some synergy there, maybe there's not. But anyway, that's kind of, nothing was stated as a plan, factual, et cetera, but they asked for more time.
Sum it up, I think the board wasn't ready to designate the present temporary site as the permanent site. They felt that we should take a look at some other options first in case there are some additional funding to move forward to enhance that project.
So then going back to putting it by the Firefighters Memorial, if it stayed in the temporary site, that would eliminate some of these organizations from contributing, basically.
Yeah, all I can say is I got the impression we were being asked to wait to designate a permanent site and spend some money, or a lot of money, before wait and give them a chance. You got the impression that it hadn't been worked on as aggressively as people had thought it was. It kind of fell through the cracks, and now they're aware, and they're meeting with Roger.
I think there's a feeling that it may enhance or improve the ability to receive some private funding and some donations if it is a little more closely aligned and connected with the existing Fireman's Memorial. Not necessarily be part of it, but, you know, be associated with somehow and be, you know, a little bit more aligned with it.
Which I guess that kind of makes sense. I guess one thing that I kind of don't like is when we vet something out, then we're told to vet it out again. So I know Commissioner Supervisor Shirk seemed to think that where it was the best spot, but I could probably see the point with the firefighter memorial. Then the ultimate question on item 3, assuming that 8-cent sales tax went, in a best case scenario, when could we break ground on the MAC? Best case.
Once the ordinance is approved, we have probably about another 3 or 4 months, I think, in the design phase. So kind of the timing is based on when the ordinance would be approved. But if it'll take 2 readings of the ordinance. So let's say the ordinance is approved in, you know, maybe by early spring of this year, 2014. We should have the design completed probably about mid-summer. Then, of course, you have to go out to, we don't have to go out to bid because we have a
CMR.
Yeah, CMAR process. We could be looking at maybe a fall, winter groundbreaking for this project. And what I passed out to you, too, by the way, is a notice of the public workshops that we're going to be hosting on the 1/8 cent sales tax projects. You can see there in the middle that we're actually having two dates. We're having three public workshops over 2 days. The first one is on Tuesday, January 21st. It'll be held at Fuji Park on Old Clear Creek Road. There'll be actually be two of them held there. One will be from 9 to 11 a.m. The second will be from 2 to 4 p.m., two separate workshops. We're kind of gearing these in the morning, afternoon, and the evening to try to catch as many people as we can. You know, we know that people have different type of work schedules. The two-hour meetings, the first part of the meeting will be an open house format. We'll basically have the projects on easels and on display with representatives to answer questions about each one of the projects. And then the second half of it will be more of a public open kind of mic process where people can ask questions, give their comments. Of course, there'll be ability to, we'll have comment forms there so people can fill out comment forms, written comment forms, and turn them into us. And then the third meeting, the second date, is on Wednesday, January 29th, and that's going to be held in the Community Center lobby. And again, the first hour of that will be the same kind of informal format. The second part of that meeting, we're going to move it into the Sierra Room, so we can take public comment here in the Sierra Room and have that televised. So that if you're not able to come to the meeting, you're at least able to sit at home on Carson Access Television and at least watch and observe and see what some of the comments, some of the questions, some of the answers of these projects are. And then in addition to that, the planning department has put together a website. It's called Carson Plan 2014. www.carsonplan2014. That is going to be up and running, I'm told, on Friday. So the public is able to access and get information about these projects through the website as well. I would like to encourage members of the Park and Recreation Commission to attend at least one of these meetings, because I think it's an important opportunity for you to get educated on the project, further education on the project. But as being Park and Recreation Commissioners, you're kind of out there in the public. You may be asked questions about these projects, and it would probably be a good idea to have some background information. So I would encourage you to attend these, at least one of these meetings.
Commissioner McKenna.
Roger, the title of this notice is for infrastructure projects, commercial corridor improvements, multipurpose athletic center, and animal services facility. Is that the order in which they'll be funded? Has the funding order been decided? Could the other things be done and the multipurpose athletic center be left off the funding?
Well, I think this is similar to the question you asked me earlier today. You keep asking me questions of that you have the decision to make and I don't. You know, this is not listed in any particular order. I think this is a random order. Again, if the projects were all approved, conceivably the multipurpose athletic center would be probably the first one funded, constructed, and completed. However, the Board of Supervisors has the final say in that. You know, they can decide the order. They can decide what is on and what is not on.
So I think, like you told us earlier, this might fund the MAC first because it's designed further than any of these other projects. The other projects haven't been designed at all. Now, just to clarify, if this 8 cent sales tax passes, which version of the MAC would we be designing?
This would be the big MAC, the large MAC, the 41,000 square foot MAC that has the two NCAA size basketball courts tandem end to end with the suspended walking track above it.
With the four high school courts going the other way.
That's correct.
And the track. Okay. Other questions? Commissioner Hebert.
Roger, I have a question about the 9/11 memorial. Do we absolutely have to have it in Mills Park, or could we move it to another park where there's a fire station and maybe we might have more room to do maybe a more appropriate, more larger memorial, say like the Ross Gold Park?
You know, that hasn't been talked about. We certainly can bring that up. I think all along the assumption would be that it would be at Mills Park, but it's certainly an item we can bring up.
Okay. I know Ross Gold is a heavily used park, and the fire station is right there. It might be an appropriate place to consider.
Bring that up.
Other questions or comments? Public comments? Okay.
I was just received a suggestion by our legal counsel here that we should notice that if you're going to attend one of these public hearings, we may want to post a notice of possible quorum. And that being the case, if you are interested and can attend one of these meetings, you might just drop me an email, let me know what meeting you're going to attend, and then we can make a determination whether it looks like we have a possible quorum or not.
Can this be posted like a lot of other times where it's a no decision is going to be made kind of thing, so if a quorum shows up, not a big deal?
That's
your intent, I assume.
But to have a quorum, we need five of us at the same meeting, right? Yeah. I mean,
couldn't we just do a general one-size-fits-all type notice? Just notice there may be a quorum of the Parks and Recreation. In that case, if one of us doesn't drop the email, we're covered.
We can do that. That's probably a really good idea. We can as a preventive measure, we can go ahead and post that notification.
Well, we could. I mean, I know a lot of us work, so the only one we could go to is the Wednesday one. Does anybody have any? That would be the one we'd go to, wouldn't it? If we did.
Probably, yes.
If work's boring one day, I might go to an earlier one. Just kidding.
I think the only one that there's even a possibility of five people being at would be the Wednesday one.
We will post the possibility of a quorum for that meeting then.
Okay. Moving on to item number five, members' announcements and requests for information. This is Commissioner Joe Cassiopo's time to talk.
Well, I really don't have any pertinent announcements at this time. School just got back in the session after the winter break. I was gone during the whole break, so I don't really have anything of importance to add right now.
Fair enough. Any other commissioners have any members or requests for information? Okay, future agenda items. Item number six. One thing I'd like to see on a future agenda, whether it's February or March, is the ice rink. We haven't had an update on that.
Before I could do that, I met with Megan Sirocco, who's now in charge of the ice skating rink, and got some preliminary figures for our revenues. And we don't have all of our bills in yet, you know, so we're thinking probably in February we'll receive all of our bills, so then we can take a look at what our net income's been on the ice skating rink. So we would probably prefer to do it at the termination of the program.
So like the March meeting?
Yeah, probably the March meeting. I can just tell you that just from casual observation, the ice skating rink has been very busy, and a lot of this has been because we've had excellent weather, you know, really nice warm weather, and it's been a very enjoyable experience for people to be out there ice skating. And nice weather rather than, you know, freezing your tail feathers off like it was earlier in the season.
What is the current projected closing date on the ice rink? Do we know that?
We're looking at the 8th or 9th of February.
Okay. Anything else on future agenda items? Commissioner Kiefer?
I just had a question. Roger, have we thought about maybe taking the ice rink through the President's Day weekend? It's a 3-day weekend. We might generate some more revenue.
You know, we tried doing that, but I can tell you that I think we did that last year, and for whatever the reason is, once you get into about past the first couple weeks, first week or so of February, the participation drops off dramatically. Yeah. In fact, we actually close for the Super Bowl. We're going to close for the Super Bowl. Last year during the Super Bowl, we had 3 skaters.
So, I mean, that's a good point, though, on this. I mean, the one year we'd actually had the closing date way out into March. It was like the 1st of March, and, yeah, we didn't even come close to that. But I still think President's Day would be at least a reasonable goal because you could have that. Everybody would know. At some point in time, as this is a continuing community event, you would know you open this time, close this time. And it is a 3-day weekend, but, yeah, part of that, too, was we had all that warm weather. And people just start thinking other things. So I still think that's a reasonable idea. Anything else? Public comments from anyone? Action on adjournment. Okay, meeting adjourned.
Yes, sir. I did that much of my mouth time.
How did you 6, 75, and 10?